For the next several months, WBHM joins AL.com and the Center for Investigative Reporting as part of the Alabama Media Group's Investigative Journalism Lab. Together, we're taking a look at Alabama's prison problems. Today, we're joined by reporter Brian Lawson. He recently reported on inmate medical care and mental health care in Alabama's correctional facilities. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, nice to be here. Thank you.
Let's start with the basics. Who is actually providing care to inmates in Alabama's prisons?
The Department of Corrections contracts out for that work. Their major contract is with a company, I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced, but Corizon, C-O-R-I-Z-O-N, like Horizon. And they have an ongoing contract to provide medical personnel and staffing in the various facilities.
And in your investigation and your reporting, you talk about the minimum standards of care for prisoners in Alabama prisons. Define that for me.
Yeah, it's sort of a funny concept. You know, you think about the Hippocratic Oath and the idea, I think the initial idea is to do no harm. With this, it sort of stops there. What they cannot do is deprive prisoners of medical attention to the extent that it becomes cruel and unusual punishment. That's what the courts have found. So it's basically serious medical needs being ignored. There being deliberate indifference in the face of a serious medical problem.
And that's what you've heard from families of prisoners and from former inmates in the Alabama prison system. So what can a prisoner do, really, when their serious medical needs are not met?
That's a question we're trying to answer. And it's an ongoing battle, I think, for all parts of the system. I mean, it's a system that doesn't have a lot of money. They're conscious of costs, just like any other HMO or other provider. At the same time, if you've got a serious medical problem and it's being ignored, you know, the clock's ticking on your injury or your illness. We haven't seen a lot of day-to-day, boy, they're just ignoring everything. But there are plenty of concerns out there that these needs aren't being met. Kelsey Stein reported several interviews with inmates or former inmates who described very serious problems that just weren't addressed.
And you wrote about one of those cases recently. Can you share that story with me?
Yeah, it was a lady named Patricia Smith, and she had been arrested going back to the last decade, like 2004. She had, one way or another, gotten some money from a loan company in Birmingham and didn't pay it back. Now, I don't know if the charge related to the fraudulent obtaining of it, but in any case, she didn't pay the money back. So they threw her in prison in February, I believe it was 2008, and she was 58, and within a month, she had died. What her attorney, you know, this is a post-mortem thing, but what they had looked at was what happened to her while she was in prison, in Tutwiler. And she had complained of you know, difficulty breathing, nausea, that sort of thing. And it got progressively worse. And over a weekend, she went to the infirmary. She was taken in there. They advised her to drink Maalox and eat ice chips, put her in kind of an isolation unit, and they went to check on her the next day, I think is how the lawsuit reads, and she had died.
You asked the question that maybe there's improper staff medical training.
The attorney argued that. He said that there are, especially on the weekends and her nights, they, you know, as a just a function of cost, I imagine, and management, there are fewer personnel available. There were issues related to use of a defibrillator, use of oxygen in treating this lady who had collapsed. There were questions about, and this is more specific to emergency situations, but there's a couple of layers of permission required in order for an ambulance to be called. The initial responder, the initial person in the infirmary has to talk to their supervisor who has to go up the ladder. It's treated as a fairly consequential call, and his argument is that time's being wasted that may be precious in some of these cases.
So what's the big takeaway from the dive that you did into medical and mental health care in the Alabama prison system?
Well, I think a couple things. One, and this isn't a fun thing for a reporter to say, but we still don't know enough. We don't know how serious the problems are. We've got anecdotal information. We've looked at a lot of lawsuits. But that's an ongoing process of discovery. And, you know, hopefully with the Justice Department looking at it and, you know, if there are issues that need to be improved or resolved, maybe some of that scrutiny will improve them. At the same time, I think Alabama is in a bit of a tight spot as it relates to this issue. Mental health care in the state or across the country isn't great. So when you apply that to a prison system, you got to figure it's not going to be significantly better, though you may be dealing with an inmate population that's especially troubled, or a pretty good section of the inmate population is troubled. So that's going to be a burden on a system. And then the same thing with health care. You're probably dealing with a lot of folks who, frankly, you know, maybe weren't living the healthiest life when they were taken into prison. And those conditions aren't going to help that. You also have this question about how much do people care about it? And I think that's the real challenge in reporting it, and the real challenge for officials or other folks in the system hoping to make a difference.
Brian, thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.